Welcome to Season 4, Episode 75 of Brody Sports Talk. My name is Derek Rusnick, and I am your humble host for our Brody Bites episode this week. I am joined, as always, by the Podfather, by the owner of the Packers, Caleb Walgren. Caleb, how you been? How you doing?
It's an exciting time. Lots of great things happening in the world of sports. I love that we've got this Brody Bites this week. We're finishing off the Brody 50. And then we're going to celebrate a little bit of freedom next week and not record. Because we're doing it good old red, white, and blue style.
Yes, you are right about that. And so we are counting down the end of season four, just a couple of episodes left. We have had such a good season for the NFL, for NBA, for MLB. I mean, those are MLB still going on, but thank you for sharing this season with us, just as a personal heart-to-heart with our listeners. I appreciate you and everything that you do for us, giving us a shout-out, giving us retweets on our Twitter at Brody Talk, and just thank you for being there with us throughout this entire season four, and season five right around the corner, and we can't wait to start there and just see where season five takes us. Let's go ahead and start out with some College World Series. This is one of my new favorite titles that you ever come up with, Caleb, and that's Gomaha. So go Tigers. LSU has won the Men's College World Series 2-1, and that 3-game series, as much as I am not a fan of LSU and all of the pointing at your ring finger that Joe Burrow does and Angel Reese does, they have every right to be there to celebrate their win, as they as other people have said, they are a wagon. LSU has come to play. They are investing in facilities. They're investing in coaches. Between Brian Kelly coming over there recently for the football team and Kim Mulkey coming over there for the women's basketball team. You can definitely tell LSU is a name out there. And so a big hats off to them, as I think they have the top two picks in the MLB draft in a pitcher and an outfielder. And, as much as I did not want to enjoy the games, as it was LSU in Florida, I wanted Wake there, I wanted TCU there. They were some very entertaining games if you like the swinging of the bats. Caleb, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I also had said TCU Wake. I didn't think anyone was going to beat Wake twice, especially back to back. LSU did that. LSU then played Florida in an epic game on Saturday night. Best game of the College World Series, I think, is clear to say. And yeah, they won that one in extras. And then I almost want to say they punted game two, not to be overly football reference here, but they started off down and they said, we're not going to bring out our best pitchers right now. And, they brought it back in game three. You know, if you basically almost give up on a game and wait for the third one, that's not always a great strategy, but it worked out really well. I'm happy for LSU. They seem to just be showing up and dominating across, like you said, so many sports at the right time. I'm curious to see, if they're going to start blowing up TikTok with some more of those Coach Kelly circle videos, like in that disco room. I don't know what exactly to call that, but it was one of the funniest things when it started showing up, and I kind of want it to come back with LSU celebrations from other sports. Like, let's get the women's basketball team in there and let's get them celebrating. Let's get the baseball team in there and see them celebrating. Because
I think it's a hype room. Like, yeah. Wouldn't you call that a hype room? Yeah.
I just remember the flashing lights and the camera going around them in a circle. I don't know where I came up with disco room. Clearly, I was never around for something like that, let alone to make that the reference here. But hats off to LSU. They won the final game, the deciding game, 18-4. Even though Florida technically scored more runs in the best of three series, LSU won two games, and that's all that matters in this instance.
I'm 100% behind you on that one. It was a sight to see, and there was a lot of runs scored. And so let's move on to a different sport. This last week, we had the NBA draft with huge numbers coming through for the draft. That was one of the highest rated NBA drafts they've had in a long time. I think everyone wanted to see officially Victor Wembanyama, as he had just been hyped all year long. Of course, to the victor goes the spoils, and he is spoiling the Spurs right now, as San Antonio had the number one overall pick. Victor comes over from Metropolitans 92 out of France, and his partner, the second best scorer on the team, Bilal Coulibaly. I apologize if I mess that up. I tried it a couple of different times, and I'm still not sure I have it right. He went number 7 to the Pacers. So, you know, we saw what Jokic did on the Nuggets this year. You know, you're going to see more and more European players come over. But it was also a really big night for the developmental leagues, as only one out of the top 5 came from a U.S. college. We had Brandon Miller at Alabama, who went to the Hornets at number 2. And then we go over to G League Ignite for Scoot Henderson, as he went to the Blazers. And then the twins, Amen and Asar Thompson, from Overtime Elite, went 4 and 5 respectively. Four was the Rockets for Amen, and then number 5 was the Pistons for Asar Thompson. I definitely want to be in the room where, like, Amen gets it to, like, hey, I got picked one pick ahead of you. I'm the better twin. And that was always a good civil rivalry. I would, I want to be in the room where, like, Mama Bosa and Mama Watt and Mama Thompson all kind of sit around together. Like, how do you create professional athletes? Let's just get, get these moms in a room and have a conversation. So that would be the top 5. Beyond that, we had Cason Wallace went to the Thunder, local team. And one of the biggest surprise of the draft was the outfit for Kansas Jayhawk, or former Kansas Jayhawk, now Toronto Raptors, Grady Dick. He had, how would you describe that, Caleb?
It was definitely a blinged out red suit. I think I even saw him, like, lift his shoe up. He had some red on the bottom of his shoe, on the red carpet, some black pants. It was definitely, like, it was that Jayhawk red, and it was super bright. Like, if you could say that a suit was getting very close to having feathers, like plumage, like a Jayhawk, it was probably about there. Like, that was the only thing that was keeping it from going to that another ridiculous level. So
So what did you think about the draft this year before we move on to trades and free agency? You know, do you have any thoughts about, you know, a guy that you that may not be in that top five, top 10 area, but you really think, oh, this guy's in a good spot? Was there anyone that just stood out to you?
I mean, I think that it's really just interesting to be able to follow the draft and see exactly everything that goes down. It's a little bit chaotic, but when is it not? You never know what's going to happen. And especially with the draft being only two rounds, you get a lot of undrafted free agents. So one of the players that I was like, I'm really curious where this guy will end up and what he would be able to do is Marquise Noel, who was the scrappy guard from K-State in the tournament. I don't know if you remember him or not, Derek, but
yeah,
basically he ended up having an immediate signing right after the draft with the Toronto Raptors. And when you think about it, I go, yes, he's small. Yes, he's undersized. He reminds me a little bit of who they've had at that point guard position, which we could get into here in a minute in free agency. But give them someone who's scrappy. Give them someone who's going to be pestering people on the defensive side of the ball. Yes, he may be undersized, but this is not the same NBA as it was in the 80s or 90s. Like, people have a lot bigger range. People have a lot more space. So I was just really curious about that one personally, just because he's one of the names I knew better because of his performance. Also, I have to ask you this just because I'm not sure. Do you know if Noah Clowney is remotely related to, like, Jadeveon Clowney or anything like that? I saw he was taken number 21 by the Brooklyn Nets. It says he's 6'10 and went to Alabama. Like, I'm like, he'd have to be so much younger. But when I saw that name Clowney, it was like an immediate pop in my head. Like, ooh, I know this name. And then I was like, I don't think I know this. And I don't think that I know him at all. So I don't know if you're looking that up, but I was just kind of like, where on earth did this guy come from?
That's a really good question. I had not actually even put those two and two together. Well, let's see here. Yeah, it's not giving me anything. He's drafted 21. You know, Alabama, I don't, you would think that he would have maybe went to, okay, so he is not related to Jadeveon Clowney at all. They share a last name, but they are not actually related by anyone knows. So there might just be, you know, something along the a similar, you know, someone down the line or whatever. But they don't know each other. They have spoken since
they are not related. Not related.
Yeah.
I feel like we need to break out any like Maury music or anything like that that we would need to do at this point. You are not related. But also Noah was from South Carolina, which also made me then have even more red flags for a second. Because I was like, I know that Jadeveon was from there because that's why he went to South Carolina. But
alas. Did you hear that Maury Povich has come out with a paternity test called You Are the Father? That's the brand name.
That is brilliant marketing.
I'm telling you, most of those sick days when I was a kid spent watching Maury Povich. That was that brings back some memories.
Man, that's so different too. We miss you, Maury.
Let's move on to the to the trades that have happened thus far. So about a week ago, we had a big trade, a three-team trade that we haven't been able to talk about as of yet because it happened right after we recorded. But, you know, so everyone knows I'm a Celtics fan because of my wife. I married into it and happy to have them. But so along with the Celtics, I am also an Oklahoma State fan. And so anytime that I can root for both my for the Celtics and for America's Brightest Orange, I'm going to go for it. And so Marcus Smart, the guard for the Celtics, has always been, you know, the dude that I love to watch. So he was part of a trade last week. He is going to the Memphis Grizzlies, where he will take his defensive talents and shine in the same arc that Tony Allen did when he was with the Grizzlies, both great defensive players, both out of Oklahoma State. So there's some precedence with the Grizzlies. So the Washington Wizards are sending over Kristaps Porzingis, who used to be called the Unicorn, was his nickname. He is a forward / center, and sent him to the Boston Celtics. They also sent over the 25th overall pick in this year's draft and a 2024 first round pick. The Washington Wizards in this case get Tyus Jones, Danilo Gallinari, and former Thunder player Mike Muscala. Moose is going to the Wizards. I hope he gets more playing time on the Wizards as more than he did on the Celtics, as he looked good for a while, but I just don't think that he fit into their offensive scheme. It's a little sad that Marcus Smart's going to another team, as it seems that he wanted to stay with the Celtics throughout his entire career. But, you know, that's just what it is when it comes to the NBA. That kind of happens. So before we move on to our other trade, any reflection on this one, Caleb?
I mean, call it what you want. I'm going to call this the we need someone who can play while Ja is suspended, and so hopefully someone who can bring some maturity to the team. If there's one thing you can say about the Grizzlies, especially towards the end of last year, you know, Ja got suspended about a video with guns, and then he did it again in the offseason. 25-game suspension. It's an 82-game season. That's not a small suspension. I saw some people saying that it was way too much, some people saying it wasn't enough. I'm going to go ahead and go in the middle and say it was just right. And they said, okay, Marcus Smart's available. Let's go ahead and go get him. Hopefully he can come in here and be a better example of what we need in the locker room, because let's face it, the Ja Morant, Dylan Brooks locker room from last year did not go very well. Not at all. So Marcus Smart, if nothing else, he's been in the league for a bit longer. He's respected. He can play starter for those 25 games, and he can come off the bench after that. So that's kind of where I'm at. I think that in general, the Grizz, I'm thinking that this is the Ja Morant deal. Or Ja Morant suspension trade. But I know that it went other ways, but that's where I'm at, because I think Marcus Smart going to the Grizzlies is one of the bigger pieces here.
No, you're right about that. So kind of a expanding story that we had from last week. So Phoenix Suns traded for Bradley Beal, who's the biggest name in there. The Suns sent sent over Chris Paul to the Washington Wizards. Well, everyone was like, well, Chris Paul will hopefully get bought out, or, you know, something like that. Well, he has found a new home already. The Washington Wizards sent Chris Paul over to the Golden State Warriors, and in return, they sent over Jordan Poole, a 2030 first-round pick, and a 2027 second round pick. I thought the Thunder trading for the Nuggets 2029 pick was crazy. A 2030 pick is already in play, and we are in 2023. Yeah, that's a fun little anecdote in that. So I'm a big Chris Paul fan. I think he's one of the best point guards to ever play the position. I've seen him in several stints in Oklahoma City. And, you know, I don't know how he's going to play with the other starters that the Warriors have, but I know that he's going to find out how to make plays and, you know, get the ball into the hands of the guys who can shoot those threes. So I think it's a good trade for the Warriors. It gets Jordan Poole out from underneath the Warriors as there is some drama between him and Draymond. And it gets Jordan Poole the ability to start on a team and show his skills. So, Caleb, I toss it over to you. What do you think about this trade? Do you think this is a good trade for one team or the other? Or do you think this is just a, you know, older player and Chris Paul's not going to do anything anymore?
I mean, I think in general, this is the Wizards, especially because they had just traded for Chris Paul and getting Bradley Beal off of their books. They're looking to be younger. They're embracing the rebuild. They're trying to find the right opportunities to take advantage of these things. I know you mentioned it with the draft a few minutes ago, but Bilal Coulibaly, he did end up getting traded to Washington from the Pacers. So, you know, they're drafting this 18-year-old from France. They're getting Jordan Poole. It's all about youth. And let's face it, Chris Paul can play with youth. We've seen him do it in Oklahoma City before. But I also think some of that was, we need to see where we can get you and where we can get value from you. So let's let you do your thing for a year. Chris Paul's not getting any younger. My curiosity of this really is, if you think the Warriors are a playoff team, I think that they definitely could be. What do you put on the floor at the end of the game? Do you have a lineup that doesn't have Chris Paul, Steph, and Klay? Because while I think Chris Paul could be a sixth man, he's so much better than that. He can do so much more than that. And so I don't want him to necessarily like go away in crunch time, but I don't understand, because it feels like this is not what Golden State has done. They've very much been we play in space. We have all these people run off screens. Like, I don't know if they're trying to get Curry less ball handling time. Like, I just, it doesn't immediately click with me, Derek.
So, yeah, there's a way. If there's anyone who could do it, it's Steve Kerr. He'll find a way to bring it together, to space the floor. I mean, Chris can still shoot a little bit, and he's still got that runner that you can do something with. So I think that it is I think there's an option there. I definitely don't take Chris Paul off the floor in the fourth quarter, you know, or at the crunch time of games, as I definitely think you can get. I mean, maybe you go three guard to center lineup, and you're just lobbing passes up to the center, and just be like, okay, that's how you need. Like, either it's a pass to Steph, a lob to the center, you know, whomever you have there, or, you know, it's threes, or because you're trying to pull everyone out to the 3-point line. Okay, well then, right behind them is going to be, you know, the bigs. I mean, you find them there easy too. I mean, I think it's an option to do it. I'm sure Steve Kerr can figure it out.
I mean, I think it would be interesting. I mean, clearly we're not talking about their best lineups ever, but if they do a lineup with Chris Paul, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, and then they bring Draymond back to play that center defensive spot, like, that's a crazy smart and highly talented group of individuals. I'm not saying it would go perfect, but I'm very curious. And I think that that's kind of where I'm at on this, is I want to see it execute. And of course, I have to wait like 3.5 months before I can actually see any games.
Yeah. So do you want to take this next point, Caleb, as we're talking about the central divisions of the MLB?
Yeah, sure. I'll go ahead and kick that one off. So as we're recording, obviously there are games going on because we record on Tuesday nights to release this on Wednesday. But I was doing a quick once over, trying to take an eye around the league as far as baseball is concerned. And the central divisions are bad at baseball. I looked in the NL Central. There's two teams that are above 500, which are the Milwaukee Brewers and the Cincinnati Reds. Both of them have a negative run differential, so they shouldn't probably be above 500, but they are. Then if you go up to the AL Central, the Twins are currently winning that division at a record of 40-40. And they are not the worst team in baseball, but the Kansas City Royals are 22-56. And the only reason they are not the worst team in baseball is because there is still a team that is located with a headquarters in Oakland that it plays semi-professional baseball. They are currently 28 games out of the AL West. But yeah, it's just bad, Derek. And I just was curious. I know that, you know, you're more of a AL East guy. You're a Yankees guy. What on earth is happening? Is this like the Central wasn't ready for some of these rules that Manfred put in, or they just aren't clamoring for talent the same way? What's going on with these central divisions, and why are they so bad?
So there's going to be an AL and an NL Central champion. Those champions go to the playoffs, and so they are saving all of their good stuff for the playoffs. So we're going to get to like end of July, and all of these teams are all of a sudden going to go on a 12 to 15 game win streak. Somehow, some way, get their run differential to spike up. I think Minnesota and Cleveland are just going to, you know, all of a sudden do something at the end of the season. No, it's just that every other team that you have has drafted better, has signed better free agents, are coached better. The Yankees are third in the AL East. The Red Sox are last in the AL East at 40-39. At 40-39, you would be winning the AL Central by a half game, because you know the Twins have a one more loss. So the worst team in the AL East is better than the best team in the AL Central. You have to go all the way down to the Angels in the AL West, who are at 43-37. They're third in the AL West. Seattle is fourth in the West, and they're only two games back of leading the AL Central. So it's a matter of Texas has blown my ears off this year. I didn't see them coming in out of anywhere. Houston has drafted well the last 7 years or so, because they used to have so many high draft picks. And the Angels, well, they should have won a lot more games. They have the two best players on the planet in Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, and yet they're middling around 500. I don't understand that. But no one wants to go to Cleveland. No one wants to go to Detroit. Or if you're going to go to Chicago, you want to go to the Cubs. You don't want to go to the White Sox. And Kansas City, You know, doesn't have anything left. They spent all their money to get that championship a couple years back. And so, I mean, they're just not, don't have the power there. The NL Central probably should just fold. All those teams should just walk away and say, we don't play baseball anymore. Because the, I mean, Milwaukee is 41 and 37, but has a negative 20 run differential. Cincinnati at 41 and 38, they had a great winning streak, but they're still underwater by 22 runs. Pittsburgh is at 44, and St. Louis in last place at 32 and 45 as we record, only has a 16 run differential. So, I mean, they're bad, but they have close games. I mean, as you alluded to a minute ago, Oakland is still a team, technically, in Oakland. Their run differential is negative 224. That's my new favorite stat of the night. As negative 224, you've just been absolutely horrible. That is twice, almost twice as many run differential as the Kansas City Royals, and they stink this year. I just think that the coast teams have worked, drafted, have brought players in. I just don't think you can get those central teams the players they need. They're just not run well. I'll just put it that way.
I think that's fair. There's one thing that you said in there that popped something in my head, and I'm going to give it a shot here. Because I think when we say his name, like, we talk about baseball so rarely on this podcast, but when we mention Shohei Ohtani, I think we need to say it as if we were saying, show me the money. So be Shohei Ohtani, like, just get that cadence in there every time we need to talk about him. And he's a legend already, like a great pitcher, a great batter. He does it all. Shohei Ohtani. What do you think, Derek?
No, I'm right there behind you. I didn't want to jump into that, but I definitely think you're right about that. And because he needs to get paid. He's a great pitcher, and also he's a great hitter, and you have both in the same player, and it's great.
And it's just a lot of fun to say.
Yeah. I will go ahead and give us our last bullet point here of Brody Bites. Brody Sports Talk is sending our condolences to the family of former NFL quarterback Ryan Mallett. He was drafted by the Patriots, coming out of Arkansas. Had a lot of bright future ahead of him. Spent 7 years in the NFL. Recently, he has been coaching back in his hometown, and from what we're reading, had a really big impact when he was coaching the high school ball. It looks like there was an accidental drowning is what the cause of death is we're seeing right now, and he passes away at the age of 35. Caleb, let me toss it over to you. Do you have any fond memories of Ryan Mallett? And, you know, I know I had some, I thought he was going to be one of the next big things. So tell me what your thoughts are.
I mean, he was one of those guys that was looked at as a prototypical size for a quarterback, 6'6", 240 pounds coming out of college. He played really well in Bobby Petrino's system at Arkansas, which there's so many red flags around that sentence now that we did not know back when he was drafted in 2011. I do think it's interesting that the pick the Patriots used to draft Ryan Mallett was actually originally the Vikings pick when Randy Moss went back to Minnesota. Talk about things that feel like they happened forever ago. Also, Mallett originally was at Michigan and transferred to Arkansas and had to sit out a year. So, I mean, things that just don't happen anymore. But he's 35. His first career touchdown pass, Derek, went to none other than J.J. Watt. So that's a legendary move right there. Not everyone has their first passing touchdown to a defensive player. But, I mean, Ryan Mallett came in. He played a little bit for the Patriots, got in there for the Texans, and even backed up Joe Flacco for a year or two before he finally, I mean, he was only in the league for a little bit. You know, he's only 35, and he's been out of the league for, 6 years? So, been coaching for a little bit. Our thoughts go to the team he was coaching. It's sad. It's sad that this accidental drowning occurred. But I also at least wanted to bring this up because Ryan Mallett was a heck of a player. He made it in the league. He started games. Yeah, it might be 9 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. He may not have played a whole lot of games, but he was someone that everyone saw a lot of promise in. And so seeing this kind of turn around the other way, it just feels like it's way too soon.
Yeah. So anytime that I see guys who were in the league or have, you know, tragedy have struck their family, when they are, you know, younger than me, it kind of makes you think about your own mortality. What I will say is, you know, we look at the NFL right now, and it's really about, you know, those running quarterbacks. And, you know, even if you don't run the ball, you have scramble guys, you have his Madden numbers for his speed, it was a 51, which means that you're slower than your offensive linemen for the most part, because they're normally in the lower 60s and sometimes upper 50s. So you are, but he had this huge arm and threw the ball down the field with touch and with accuracy and could get the ball down there. So, you know, when he came into the league, that's what the quarterback was. You had, you know, the Joe Flacco type, like you were saying, he backed him up. Joe Flacco was that type of guy, bigger, good arm, wasn't really mobile that much. But yeah, I mean, anytime that you have someone who spent 7 years in the league, you're a professional. You know what you're doing. And those guys that know how to hold a clipboard, know how to, you know, spot starts and stuff like that. And clearly everything that I'm reading here was just a stand-up guy. Did a lot for his community and touched a lot of lives when it came to his coaching. And our heart goes out to the family and to those who knew him. So on that somber note, I do want to thank you for listening. And so if you want to reach out to us, share anything with us, our Twitter is at Brody Talk. Our Linktree, linktr.ee/BrodyTalk. And on behalf of Caleb, my name is Derek. Do me a favor and have a wonderful day.
Bye, y'all.